Members, 1 o'clock, Kevin Wright, I'm going to call the April 7th, 2021 meeting of the House Taxes Committee to order. Ms. Griska, would you please take the roll?
Marquardt.
Present.
Marquardt, present. Liz Lagarde.
Present.
Liz Lagarde, present. Davids.
Davids, present.
Davids, present. Agbaje.
David's present.
Present.
Agbaje, present. Carlson.
Carlson, present.
Carlson, present. Detmer.
Detmer, present.
Detmer, present. Garofalo. Excused. Gomez.
Present.
Gomez, present. Herr. Herr. Hertas.
Hertas, present.
Hertas, present. Howard.
Present.
Howard, present. McDonald. McDonald, present.
McDonald, present.
Miller.
McDonald, present.
McDonald, present. Miller.
How are they coming? 12:30.
We're excused. Moran. Moran. Mortensen.
Present.
Mortensen, present. Robbins.
Present.
Robbins, present. Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Schultz.
Present.
Schultz, present. Stevenson.
It's okay.
Present.
It's okay.
Stevenson, present. Swazinski.
Present.
Swazinski, present. Joachim.
Present.
Joachim, present. Herr. Moran.
Present.
Moran, present. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. We have a quorum. Representative Les Lagarde, would you like to move the April 6, 2021 minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lesgard moves approval of the April 6, 2021 minutes of the Taxes Committee. Any comments, questions, criticisms?
Yes,
see none?
Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
I have one criticism regarding the minutes.
Please proceed, Representative McDonald.
You always ask Representative Lesgard to approve the minutes. You don't even ask me or anyone else. So that's my only constructive criticism. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald, you be ready. You be ready. All right.
Okay.
Sounds good. With that, members, right. I'm going to ask you to temporarily unmute as we take the vote on the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All the polls say nay.
No.
The motion does prevail. The April 6, 2021 minutes are approved. So, members, today we're going to hear testimony on House File 991 and actually on the DE amendment that will be coming forward. And our first testifier is the Commissioner of Revenue, Commissioner Doty. Commissioner Doty, welcome to the committee. Great to have you here. If you'd please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Chair Marquardt and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Robert Doty, and I am the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Governor Walz's budget prioritizes those who have been hit hardest by the COVID-19 pandemic, working families, small businesses, and students. These priorities are reflected in his tax and budget proposal and also reflected in the proposal before the committee today. Now I'd like to highlight a few specific proposals included in the omnibus bill. Small businesses receive important support through the extension of the Angel Tax Credit, conformity with federal tax changes, and a needed update to Section 179 expensing. The pandemic and recession have especially hit low-wage sectors such as a restaurant, warehouse, grocery store workers, health aides, and more. Expanding the working family credit to single adults or those who don't claim dependents, as well as younger adult taxpayers who have fewer supports, would help boost the income of many more Minnesotans, including those in low-wage jobs who are doing essential work during the pandemic. As we move forward, we hope to continue to discuss the inclusion of the governor's proposals to further increase working family credit amounts and phase outs and extend the credit to 19 and 20 year olds. Similar to the governor's budget, the omnibus bill provides a one-time subtraction for unemployment insurance benefits received in 2020. The only difference between the two proposals is that the governor's subtraction does not include an income limit. Tens of thousands of Minnesotans experienced job loss as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and relied on unemployment insurance this last year. The omnibus bill and the governor's budget allocate substantive funds to provide tax relief for these affected taxpayers. The House proposal takes a similar approach to the governor's bill to provide simpler tax filing and long-term record keeping for individuals and businesses through conformity with many of the provisions of federal law that have been enacted since December 31, 2018. We are grateful that the amended bill includes the governor's targeted approach for businesses that receive federal forgiveness for their Paycheck Protection Program loans. These businesses will be allowed an exclusion of the first $350,000 from Minnesota income. Approximately 90% of the loans received in Minnesota are in amounts of less than $350,000, and therefore the entire amount would be excluded. This will help ensure that Minnesota's small businesses remain an economic engine for communities across the state. Turning to the property tax portions of the bill, I want to commend the chair for including expansions to the homestead property tax refund and the renter's credit and our technical fix for the Sustainable Forest Incentive Act SFIA program. The homestead and renter's credit program has been an important tool to provide property tax relief to about 800,000 Minnesotans who received the property tax refund to help offset their property taxes. House File 991, as amended, increases the amount of the credit and expands the income threshold for the homesteads and renters credits, providing over $40 million in relief in property taxes payable in 2020. We appreciate the inclusion of the vapor delivery sales language in the bill. These provisions will help ensure that Minnesota's laws are updated to reflect federal changes to the PACT Act that passed in December. We also appreciate the inclusion of devices under the 95% wholesale tax. We know that price is one of the biggest deterrents of youth smoking. Lastly, I want to thank the chair for including many of the provisions in the department's policy and technical bill, as well as many of the recommended tax updates from the governor's budget. We also want to thank you for including proposals that help make these important investments by raising revenue needed. In the coming weeks, we look forward to working with the tax committees to ensure a fair and equitable tax bill for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Doty, and we look forward also in working with you as we move to a final tax bill.
Absolutely.
Very good. Thank you so much. Members, we've got about 27 remaining testifiers. What I would ask is that we limit that testimony to 2 minutes for each testifier. When you get to the 15-second mark, you'll see Mr. Peterson will have his hand raised. That's a 15-second mark. And then also, members, after each testifier, I'll allow a question or two. So after each one. So testifiers, when you are completed, you can leave. We're not going to be coming back to you. So the first testifier then is Maya Olson, and on deck, Irene Fernando. Maya Olson, welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Chairman Court, members of the committee, thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. My name is Maya Olson, and I am completing my 26th year as a substitute teacher. I only recently completed my first year as a school board member in Bloomington. I ran for school board because I grew up in a family of strong public education supporters, and I wanted to make a positive difference in our schools. So it was quite traumatic for me to begin my very first week on the school board, January 2020, having to decide what cuts to make to our school district. There are never good options when you have to make cuts to public schools, which are greatly underfunded to begin with. Since then, both the pandemic and the call to action to fix the inequities in our public school system have created new and pressing needs. Even before then, students were coming to school with inequities, from housing to healthcare, and schools were expected to fix all of this. Schools have been expected to provide mental health care, nutrition, childcare, safety, and more, on top of educating children. Public schools specifically are required to take every single student, no matter how great the need, and rightfully so. However, we need the funds to meet their needs. It is time to reimagine how we fund public schools. If we truly value all children, we need to value public education as a top priority. Communities thrive around strong schools, and children thrive when they can be proud of their school within their community. How do we do this? Where do we find the funds? It's simple. We restore our tax system to the way it was before outrageously generous tax breaks were given to the wealthiest among us, including the gift of corporate welfare, a gift that keeps on giving, all while our schools continue to be in great need. Now is the time to give back, not by asking anyone to pay more than their fair share, but simply by saying enough is enough. January will mark my second year on the school board. I respectfully ask that you do what you can to prevent our school district, along with dozens of others, from having to make more devastating budget cuts. Our children deserve better. Thank you for this tax bill, which fairly taxes the wealthiest Minnesotans and begins to adequately fund what our children deserve. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Olson, any questions? Very good. We're going to move to Irene Fernando, and on deck then is Dominic McQuarrie. Irene Fernando, please introduce yourself. The committee. Irene? Okay. Don't see Irene on the Zoom, so we're going to move to Dominic McQuarrie and then Jill Larson on deck. So Dominic McQuarrie, welcome to the committee. If you'd please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. A little easier not having to follow Commissioner Fernando. Thanks for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, I'm Dominic McQuarrie, Director of Public Policy and Community Relations at the Amherst H. Wilder Foundation. And we are a member of the Together We Rise campaign. I'm here to speak in favor of some of the provisions, including House File 991. First, I'd like to thank the committee for the increased support and scope of the Working Family Credit. The Working Family Credit, similar to its federal sibling, the EITC, has broad support for a reason. It's an efficient tool to provide support to low-income households where the dollars will have a large impact. I would also like to thank the committee for their inclusion of new and ongoing revenues in the proposal, which asks some of the highest earners in our state to pay more. While the overall budget balance sheet is flipped in the right direction, our projected revenue is still below where we were in February 2020. Additionally, the economic recovery has not been felt equally by all Minnesotans, and these economic impacts may extend far beyond this budget or the availability of federal relief funds. People were experiencing homelessness, hunger, long waits for dental and behavioral health care, and more before the pandemic, and these societal shortfalls will unfortunately exist after. The tax code, and therefore the tax committee, holds an immense amount of power to either help us face and tackle these challenges or maintain the status quo. So thank you again for putting forward proposals that recognize how we need to change our system today to push for the state that works for all Minnesotans.
Thank you very much, Mr. McQuarrie, for that testimony. We do have now Commissioner Fernando is here, so we'll go to Commissioner Fernando and then to Jill Larson. Commissioner, please introduce yourself and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Irene Fernando, and I'm the Hennepin County Commissioner for District 2, which includes Plymouth, Medicine Lake, Golden Valley, the northern third of Minneapolis, and St. Anthony Village. Over the past year, I have personally observed youth and family homelessness grow dramatically in Hennepin County. As a local elected leader, I partnered with staff leaders and my colleagues in a race against time to expand shelter capacity before the onset of a dangerous Minnesota winter. On the heels of that experience and in my role as the vice chair of the Association of Minnesota Counties Economic Development, Workforce, and Housing Committee, I'm incredibly appreciative of this bill, which recognizes homelessness as an issue in every county. The issue of homelessness does not occur in a vacuum of the metro area. My commissioner colleagues across the state have expressed concern about the growing number of individuals and families experiencing homelessness and housing instability in their counties. Homelessness and housing instability may take different forms across the state. In some instances, people may be staying in their cars or on the couches of friends and family in order to get a roof over their heads. Some migrate to the metro where resources may seem more readily available. And in these cases, people are faced with the difficult reality that in order to seek a safe place to lay their heads at night, they must leave the support and connections of their home communities. As such, the Association of Minnesota Counties for the first time has identified increasing resources for housing security and affordability as a statewide legislative priority this year. We support direct investments in prevention programs to address the growing crisis of homelessness across the state, such as rental assistance and foreclosure prevention programs. And as the AMC letter to the committee points out today, we know this isn't just the right thing to do, it's also the cost-effective thing to do. Stable housing leads to better outcomes in a variety of areas, including but not limited to health, education, economic self-sufficiency, and property tax systems. I know in previous committee hearings, members have heard from my fellow county commissioners from St. Louis County, Olmsted County, and even a commissioner who operates his own shelter in Beltrami County.
Commissioner, that is time. Please finish your sentence.
Every single person deserves a place to lay their heads. Thank you for your consideration, because homelessness is a Minnesota problem and needs a Minnesota solution.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the commissioner? See none, thank you very much. Jill Larson is next with Beth Cadoon on deck. Ms. Larson, please introduce yourself and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am Jill Larson with the Minnesota Business Partnership. I just want to note that I've also submitted some additional written testimony. Minnesota businesses and individuals already pay some of the highest taxes in the country. They are already paying more under our current tax system. That's why, in part, we have a budget surplus. The permanent tax increases included in this proposal would harm many Minnesota businesses, placing them at a competitive disadvantage and impeding Minnesota's economic recovery. And although we support the small business tax relief, the partnership audit, and the pass-through entity election provisions in the bill, we oppose these tax increases. Specifically, we oppose the fifth-tier individual income tax. It would give us the second highest rate in the country, making it even more difficult to recruit talent to Minnesota. As we've discussed before, the SALT deduction cap in the federal bill makes Minnesota state income tax rates even more relevant as we compete with other states for high-wage workers. Businesses and jobs have become highly mobile, and the COVID pandemic has significantly accelerated the trend toward working remotely. Companies are rethinking their corporate headquarters locations, and many employees can work for a Minnesota-based company from another state. Raising the income tax will only accelerate that trend. We also oppose the corporate tax increase provisions, including taxing previously taxed foreign income and the worldwide combined reporting provision. The foreign income provisions are a significant departure from Minnesota's and all other states' policies and would result in large tax increases on many Minnesota companies. Taxing foreign income at the state level puts our Minnesota businesses at a serious competitive disadvantage with non-US companies. Most countries don't tax income earned outside their country, so these proposals actually give foreign companies an advantage when they compete with Minnesota companies. And the worldwide combined reporting provision would make Minnesota an extreme outlier. No other state has mandatory worldwide. We have a budget surplus, a robust reserve. We're getting federal dollars. We think these tax increases are uncompetitive and unnecessary, and we ask that you not support them. Thank you.
Ms. Larson, thank you so much. Beth Cadoon is next. And Vislam Adam is on deck. Ms. Cadoon, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Beth Cadoon. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I first want to thank you for the inclusion of some positive provisions in this bill. We appreciate the federal conformity items preventing a state tax hit, as these items were provided federally in order to mitigate the COVID-19 fallout and to keep more businesses viable and more people employed. We, however, strongly urge you to adopt full conformity on the PPP loans. Minnesota should not be penalizing businesses that had to take larger loans because they had more employees that they were retaining. Minnesota should join the majority of the states, including all our neighboring states, that are not imposing the state tax hit. We also continue to urge early passage, as the lack of conformity has resulted in great uncertainty and hardship for many businesses. We also thank you for the inclusion of the pass-through SALT cap provision, the partnership federal audit updates, the property tax levy reduction, the angel tax credit, the Section 179 clarification, and some targeted relief to hard-hit industries. However, we note that most of the tax relief is temporary in nature, whereas the tax increases are permanent. These would make Minnesota an extreme tax outlier, and they're imposed at a time when the state is running a large surplus. There are billions of federal funds coming into the state coffers, and our economy is coming off the worst economic downturn in 70 years. These permanent tax increases would undermine investment, entrepreneurship, talent recruitment and retention, all items that we need for our growing economy. Specifically, we oppose the new fifth tier. Minnesota, as was mentioned, would have the second highest rate just behind California. State income taxes are more relevant in today's world of increased mobility, telecommuting, and with the federal SALT cap. This also hits many businesses. This will take cash out of the private sector that is needed for those businesses to hire employees and grow their businesses. We also oppose the corporate income tax changes on foreign earnings. Minnesota's economic success relies on our ability to compete in a global marketplace. There's a good letter from the COS, the Council of State Taxation, that I would suggest you look at regarding how this really would put Minnesota at a huge competitive disadvantage. We urge you
to do time. Go ahead and finish up.
Thank you. We urge you to advance policies to help in Minnesota's recovery and not impose these additional tax burdens. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Cadoon? And members, I forget after each witness to say that. So if you've got a question, just raise your hand quickly and I can come back. But I forget from time to time. All right. Thank you very much. Next up, Abdislam Adam, and then on deck, Harmony Graves. Abdislam Adam, welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
We can. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony, and welcome.
Thank you. I'm Abdislam Adam. I'm a Fridley School Board member. This is my third year. And also, I'm assistant principal at Highland Park Senior High School in St. Paul. I'm a lifelong educator. I've been an ELL teacher and then became an administrator 4 years ago. And I'm here to support ELL programs as well as increasing teachers of color within our school system. And the reason for that is that Minnesota has been struggling with this persistent education gap that students of color are not achieving as well as they're supposed to. So increasing the percentage of teachers of color and American Indian teachers in Minnesota is needed to close opportunity and achievement gaps and to meet established state goals for the world achievement and integration and higher education attainment. Rather than continue the appalling, the same process for 20 years that has not moved one inch, we need to really make drastic changes, and increasing teachers of color will help the students to achieve comprehensively in an interconnected way. This I'm really calling for that because I've seen that even though our students of color has increased to 35%, teacher workforce remains teachers of color remain at this small less than 5%, and that's just not acceptable. I think if we want everybody to do well, and we want all our students to have access to quality education and fairness and fair chance. Secondly, I would like to support the ELL programming. We have students from all over the world, and St. Paul District has the largest number of ELL learners, as you may know. So does Fridley, and so are many of our schools. So we need, we have the world languages at our fingertips. So while they learn ELL, quality programs like ELL learners in the mainstream, as well as the co-teaching model, will help the students to
Mr. Adams, thrive that is
in
time.
School system. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Adams? All right, next up, thank you, is Harmony Graves, and Gino Fragnito is on deck. Harmony Graves, please welcome to the committee and please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, my name is Harmony Graves and I am a freshman at Osseo Senior High School in Brooklyn Park. I'm a violinist in the school orchestra, and I've played the violin for 5.5 years now. Thank you for allowing me to speak here to you all. I am here today on behalf of myself and other students on how the lack of funding has impacted our education and mental well-being. As an African-American and Native American young lady, growing up in the public school system, something that has truly affected my mental well-being has been a lack of cultural relevant curriculum. Outside of my home, students like myself get more of our cultural history and attributes from school. I believe raising taxes on the rich to create more funding for public schools will give the teachers more resources to explore more cultural relevant curriculum. This is just one of many things I believe taxing the wealthier to fund the education of students in Minnesota. Also, mental health is another thing that schools need. Like counselors. I'm not sure if anyone here today has heard about the new tutoring system, Osseo District, and how there's enough how there's not enough funding for tutors. Teachers are having to step up outside of our Monday through Thursday schedule for hours and hosting free tutoring on Google Meets on Fridays from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. Due to this, they must cut their office hours short and tend to as many students as possible. Tutoring has become necessary due to failing grades and lack of communication between students and teachers. Funding that we could receive will help the tutoring crisis by being able to hire tutors and keep teachers in their class setting. As I stand before you today, I am one of the students who is taking advantage of the tutoring program being offered by my teachers. While I'm grateful that my teachers are willing to go above and beyond to make sure I am successful, I am sad to inform you today that, like myself and many others, I will have to attend summer school to make up lost credits to make sure that I graduate on time. Coming from an A honor roll student, now failing student, this has caused depression, anxiety, and fear that my future is at stake. I want to be clear.
Ms. Graves, that's time. Do you want to just finish up there, please?
Yep, we here in Minnesota have to come together and do the right thing and tax the wealthy to create proper funding for education in the future of all Minnesotans.
Ms. Graves, thank you so much for your testimony. Any questions? See none? Thank you. Next, we have Gino Fragnito, and then Leah Gardner is on deck. So, Gino Fragnito, welcome to the committee and introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Gino Fragnito, and I'm the Government Relations Director for the Minnesota CPA Society. And we thank you for including conformity in this bill. As you know, taxpayers and tax preparers are anxiously awaiting a resolution so they can file with certainty and know for sure what their refund or tax liability might be. The conformity bill early in the session would have given a sense of certainty and a relief to many, but getting this done as soon as possible will definitely help those affected by the pandemic. I'd like to note that some businesses are needing to use a second draw PPP loan to cover potential Minnesota tax liabilities on the first, and I'm sure that was never the intention of anybody or the program. They did what they were asked to do with the money, and Minnesota should fully conform to the PPP loan forgiveness. Reducing complexity and compliance costs are possible, and providing certainty will be welcome news for taxpayers. Mr. Chair, I'd also like to thank you for including the partnership audit language in this bill. This has been a work in progress for the last 5 years, and we're looking forward to finally getting it across the finish line. One section I would like to note where CPAs do have a concern is in Section 9 of Article 2 with the resident trust language. And this language in this section is overly broad and we feel will negatively affect Minnesota businesses. One particular item I'd like to call out is using the location of a tax preparer as one of the determining factors to establish a trust as a Minnesota trust. You may recall that there was a law passed about 5 years ago that prevents this for individuals. Now it's being applied to the tax return preparer as a factor for trust residency. This will deter trust from using Minnesota accounting or other administrative services and frankly drive the business to other states. Mr. Chair and members, technology allows us to receive services from anywhere in the world. Why would we discourage doing business with Minnesota advisors? Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I look forward to working with the committee as the bill moves forward.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fragnito. Any questions? Seeing none, going to move to Leah Gardner, and then Don Van Hees is on deck. Leah Gardner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Leah Gardner, Policy Director at Hunger Solutions Minnesota. We appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of the proposal to raise taxes on those who can afford to pay more, the households and corporations with the greatest resources. We also support expanding tax credits, including the Working Family Credit and Renters Credit, which serve as powerful tools to advance equity and economic security for low and moderate income Minnesotans. The economic impact of COVID-19 has not been felt evenly. While some have done well, many low-income working families and communities of color are struggling like never before. Hunger has reached unprecedented levels, including as many as 1 in 5 Minnesotans experiencing food insecurity, and nearly double that rate for communities of color. In tough times, Minnesotans take pride in taking care of one another. Unfortunately, we're just becoming aware of proposed cuts in several food access programs. We can afford to do better. History tells us that those hit hardest by the current economic downturn will be the last to recover, and we must continue to rise to the occasion and leverage the resources necessary to support those struggling to make ends meet. Thank you very much for the time today.
Thank you very much. Ms. Gardner, any questions? Very good. If not, next up is Don Van Hees, and then Carrie Jo Felder is on deck. So Don Van Hees, welcome to the committee. Please state your name, begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Don Van Hees, and I am the Community Services Director and Agency Planner for the Lakes and Pines Community Action Council in East Central Minnesota. I oversee the tax assistance program at Lakes and Pines and have had the privilege to help ensure that customers in our community are receiving the tax benefits they are eligible for. Thank you for the chance to talk to you today about the Working Family Credit. At Lakes and Pines, year after year, we hear families' excitement when they realize they are getting this credit back. Recently, we received a thank you card in which the customer shared their relief that they felt when they received this tax break. Another family shared, "I receive the Working Family Tax Credit each year on my tax return, and it gives me more money to pay my bills and put food on the table. Expanding the tax credit would provide more support to more workers across our state, along with supporting our local business community with increased revenue, which is significant in rural Minnesota. I would like to encourage the committee to consider adopting some of the governor's proposals to increase, like increasing it for the families with children and expanding eligibility to 19 and 20 year olds. Often we hear how just this extra money can pay for groceries for the whole year or assist with the rent payments. As the director of our volunteer income tax assistance program, I've also seen the importance of offering taxpayers assistance to accurately file their returns and claim the credits they're eligible for, including the Working Family Credit. We saw that there is a proposed increase to the funding for taxpayers' assistance being considered by the State Government Finance Committee, and I wanted to emphasize how important that assistance is for helping workers access this and other credits. Thank you for your time and for supporting low-income working families.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Any questions? Next up is Carrie Jo Felder, and I do want to remind the public and members that there were also a number of letters that were received by the committee, and that is on the House of Representatives Taxes Committee website, and if you go to the lower right, you will see all of those letters also. So besides the testifiers, there are also a number of letters that have been brought forward also. So next up then is Carrie Jo Felder, and on deck is Katie Mastel. Carrie Jo Felder, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. My name is Carrie Jo Felder, and I'm a prior school board member for Minneapolis Public Schools, and I'm a parent of two students in middle school. And I just wanted to come today to say that I would like to see education fully funded. As a school board member in Minneapolis, we started off from millions of dollars deficits every single year. And I just know that it would really make a difference. When you're starting from a $33 million deficit and you really have to take care of those kids for everything everyone's been talking about, if it's for housing, if it's food insecurities, trauma, all of those pieces, crime, that all stems from not having a great education. And that's something that we really owe our youth. One of the things that I've also noticed that it's been expanding to the metro areas and other suburbs. When you have to fully fund special education that the state doesn't pay us fully for anyways, that is a huge, huge piece of it. And our students really deserve the best. They really deserve it. And when we think about the future and what we want to see in the future, it is very important that we give them the education that they need now, because we'll be paying for it twice as much, three times as much further on down the line. And I know that's something that, you know, we all don't want to do. We would like to see all of those programs go away because everybody's taken care of. They can get a good job. They can buy a home. They can eat well. And all those things stem from education. And so I would really love to see the money go towards fully funding education and realizing that the kids are our future. Another piece of it is teachers of color. Our kids need to be able to see each other. And so teachers of color are very important to put in front of our students because they know they can. at that certain point in time, whether it's kindergarten or later on down the line. I think that that's very important. I just really want to bring forward again, you know, the crime pieces that we might be seeing is a direct result of not having a great education and being accepted into those jobs in that arena. And that's on all of us. And if we are really serious about wanting to see those numbers go down and those pieces go away and neighbors taking care of each other, we really have to take a look at what we're putting into our education, because we're getting out of our education.
That exactly is time. What we're
putting into it. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any questions? If not, next is Katie Mestel, and Lori Higgins is on deck. Ms. Mestel, welcome to the Tax Committee, all the way here from Fargo-Moorhead.
Yes.
Good afternoon. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Markwood and members of the House Taxes Committee. My name is Katie Mastel, and I serve as the Vice President of Public Policy at the Fargo-Moorhead West Fargo Chamber of Commerce, situated right on the border of Minnesota and North Dakota. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony in regards to House File 991, the Omnibus Tax Bill. On behalf of our over 2,000 chamber member businesses, we support full federal tax conformity for PPP loans and are deeply concerned with the permanent tax increase of the new fifth tier. PPP full federal tax conformity is our number one priority this session. Thank you for moving in the right direction with this issue with the partial tax conformity. Though well intentioned, this just doesn't go quite far enough. During the pandemic, the state has had to make many tough decisions, numerous which consequently negatively impacted business. While these same businesses now begin to rebuild from the economic devastation of closing their doors and halting business, they will now face an unexpected tax hit from the state on the federal support that they received. Tax conformity is one area where the state can step up and support our business community. This urgent need should not be delayed any longer. And with our unique bi-state position, we experience everyday struggles of border city competitiveness. And on this particular issue, our North Dakota neighbors just across the river don't have the burden of a state tax hit on the federal support they received. So additionally, House File 991, we're deeply concerned with the permanent tax increase as it will cause us to be a severe outlier harming the competitiveness of the region. On behalf of our members, we urge your support of full federal tax conformity for PPP loans without further delay. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Mastel. I have one question for you before I go to Representative Swazinski. Would you rather have gone and done this on Zoom or spent 8 hours in the car driving back and forth from St. Paul, Ms. Mastel?
Well, Chair Markwood, I do not envy you for having to drive back and forth all the time during regular sessions. It was nice to call in, but I always enjoy visiting anyway.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. Representative Swazinski, I saw your hand raised. Okay, very good. So no questions. So thank you very much. Next up is Lori Higgins, and then Eric Berenstein is on deck. So Lori Higgins, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Lori Higgins, president of the Metro North Chamber of Commerce, which represents over 700 businesses throughout the North Metro. We have worked extremely hard over this past year in providing resources and assistance to businesses large and small. Some have survived and some have not, and the stories we have heard from employers have been heartbreaking. Today, I'm asking you to support your Minnesota employers by supporting full PPP tax conformity and to do so as soon as possible. Struggling businesses who took a PPP loan saw it as a lifeline to keep their doors open and employees employed. To be forgivable, you had to spend it on bringing back your employees and other hard expenses. It was not money used going to the bottom line. I'd like to read portions of two testimonials. The first is from a restaurant owner who opened shortly before the pandemic began and barely had a chance to get started. She says, as a restaurant owner struggling to stay afloat, the PPP funds helped us cover some expenses. Those funds were not income earned or any profits that our business took, and the funds have since been depleted. Taxing PPP funds might be the last straw that forces businesses like myself out of business permanently. We have also heard from many of our CPA and accounting firms who are experiencing extra burdens due to the delay in a decision. One CPA wrote to me, tax season is hard enough without the nonconformity issue, but even worse is that Minnesota is taxing money that is to help businesses. There's a large surplus, and we should not have more businesses moving to neighboring states that have conformed to federal. And of course, it makes the CPA's life that much more miserable when we have to extend or amend returns for their late changes. So two very different perspectives, both important for you to hear. And lastly, I would ask that you consider full tax conformity. Please do not create artificial winners and losers by taxing those who received more funds than others because they had more employees and more expenses. Those businesses were deemed as qualified to receive a loan due to their hardship. Please do not penalize them simply because their forgivable loan was a bit larger. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much for your testimony today. Any questions for Ms. Higgins? Seeing none, thank you. We move next to Eric Berenstein, and then Heidi Swank is on deck. Mr. Berenstein, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself, begin your testimony.
Chairman Marquardt, members of the committee, my name is Eric Berenstein, and I am the policy director at We Make Minnesota, which is a pro-revenue coalition of labor and community groups from across the state. I am happy to be here today in support of the House Omnibus Tax Bill, which would expand the corporate tax base to include profits sheltered abroad and would marginally raise tax rates on Minnesota's highest earners. The bill would also expand many low-income tax credits, improving the progressivity of Minnesota's overall tax code. The sensible tax increases included in this proposal would fund key public investments in a robust and equitable recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. They would also help ensure the stability of Minnesota's long-term budget picture. Although recent estimates projected a substantial surplus for the 22-23 biennium, the majority of these excess funds are comprised of one-time money. The structural portion of the surplus is a slim $260 million half of 1% of current spending over that period. Furthermore, this figure ignores cost increases resulting from inflation and is predicated on optimistic assumptions of a rapid recovery that could easily fail. For the moment, Minnesota is in an enviable position compared to many states that have less robust tax codes, for which the pandemic has meant even deeper deficits. Staying ahead of the curve requires preparing for an uncertain future, not resting on the status quo policy. Setting the tax code up to raise more from those whose earnings have proven robust throughout the pandemic is a smart step to secure our long-term solvency. Doing so may not be the preference of the top 0.7% that will see their income taxes rise slightly. And of course, it is the job of the business lobby to oppose business tax increases. But we simply cannot have a tax code that is written for the seven-figure earners and multinational corporate tax dodgers. To disguise themselves as altruistic, objections to these policies are framed as being made in the defense of our economic health. This flies in the face of our state's proud history as a leader in collective action. Minnesota has had relatively higher taxes than one of the nation's strongest economies for decades. And in states with robust employment, low poverty, and high wages, like Minnesota, are not
Mr. Bernstein, time.
Arguing against these tax increases is a naked defense of the richest Minnesotans, and so I urge you to support them.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the last testifier, and this is rhetorical, but are you a evil tax dodger, as you were basically saying these corporations and people that actually work for a living are, if you're following current law? I don't need to answer that, but it's interesting how we got these tax dodgers and these awful people that are just following the law. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much. We will move to Heidi Swank, and on deck is Nan Madden. Heidi Swank, there you are. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt and members of the Tax Committee. My name is Heidi Swank. I'm the Executive Director of Rethos, Minnesota's statewide historic preservation nonprofit. I'm here today representing the coalition that is Revitalize MN as a group of over 35 nonprofits, construction trades, developers, individual constituents, and private businesses working to save Minnesota's state historic tax credit. As you know, this tax credit was passed in 2010, and since then has created 144 projects spanning the entire state, has created more than 18,000 jobs for our workers, and generated more than $3.5 billion in economic impact. We're here to thank you and the committee for including the Minnesota's Historic Structures Rehabilitation Tax Credit in the Omnibus Tax Bill and extending that sunset to 2029. The coalition looks forward to working with this body and the rest of the legislature throughout the remainder of this legislative session. And once again, thank you for supporting our state's workers and our historic spaces.
Ms. Swank, thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Very good. Thank you. Next, we have Nan Madden, and on deck, Barta Wahi. So, Nan Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. It is urgent and necessary to address the disparities and disinvestment that existed before the pandemic hit, from affordable housing to childcare to the barriers limiting opportunities for Minnesotans of color. The state's February forecast showed an improved budget situation, but general revenues are still below what was projected in February 2020. Additional federal funding coming to the state is good news, but those resources are temporary and are not a substitute for sustainable new revenues. It makes sense for those with the most resources to contribute a bit more in order to ensure Minnesotans can get through the pandemic and its harmful impacts and build a stronger, more equitable future. We particularly support creating a new fifth income tax bracket on taxable income above $1 million. This is a strategy that Minnesota has successfully used before. The fourth tier, passed in 2013, contributed to a fairer tax system and funded education investments across the state. This is a policy that a majority of Minnesotans support. We also support expanding the working family credit and renter's credit, which would improve the economic well-being of lower income seniors, people living with disabilities, workers, and families. The working family credit expansions would boost the incomes of lower income workers, expand eligibility to workers and families currently left out, and would prevent additional hardship for workers who lost jobs or wages during the pandemic. We also encourage you to consider the additional working family credit expansions for younger workers and families with children in the governor's supplemental budget. Expanding the renter's credit is also a way the bill recognizes the longstanding shortage of affordable housing, and it is well targeted to Minnesotans who struggle to afford their housing and other basic necessities. Thank you for these efforts to meet Minnesotans' needs today and create a stronger, more equitable recovery. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Madden? Very good. Thank you. Next up, Marty Wahi, and on deck, Max Hall. So, Marty Wahi, please introduce yourself.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Marquardt and members of the committee. My name is Barta Wahi, and I'm the Executive Director of the Children's Defense Fund of Minnesota. I am always excited to testify with in Tax Committee and to talk about the connection between tax policy and child and youth well-being. As we've seen these past few months at the federal level, tax policy is an important mechanism that can help children, youth, and families achieve greater economic security. Geographic, economic, and racial inequities have long created barriers for children and youth prior to the pandemic, and these have only been exacerbated during this time, and that we know that while some Minnesotans have prospered, others have struggled. I want to highlight our support of the Working Family Credit. It is a proven policy and a critical tool to help support economic stability of families. Expanding it, particularly to young adults ages 19 and 20, makes sense in both the immediate and long term, because we know even small increases to income and support can have positive impacts on families. We also want to express our support of the fifth tier income tax, calling on the support of those who have prospered during this time is critical as we move into a period of recovery so that we can ensure all Minnesotans are recovering together moving forward. We will need the necessary revenue for child and youth investments that ensure healthy births and bonding with caregivers, to ensure that families have the economic support they need to meet basic needs, to ensure that all children and youth are able to recenter academically and socially, emotionally, and finally, to address the barriers I spoke of that have left children in greater Minnesota, children in low-income households, and children of color marginalized in our community. Increased revenue and expansion of the Working Family Credit combined with other supports can help ensure children and youth can thrive and that our tax policies are aligned with our values during COVID and as we move to recovery. We can't rely on only the federal supports to help us get through this time. We need to make the necessary investments for a stronger Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Wahi. Any questions? Thank you. Next up, we have Max Hall and then Eric Skog to follow. Max Hall, please introduce yourself.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Max Hall, Public Affairs and Political Action Director with AFSCME Council 5. We represent about 43,000 state, county, and city employees throughout the state. We want to express our strong support for House File 991. One of the best and most significant ways of truly showing support for the working class is through the tax code. And our union is proud to support this bill that proposes a fifth-tier income tax on married couples who earn more than $1 million per year, expanding and increasing the working family credit to more Minnesotans, and the expanded definition of eligible workers claiming this credit, as well as fairly raising taxes on large corporations holding their profits overseas through the global intangible low tax income, the GILTI provisions contained in the bill. All tax bills need to be looked at and put into context. The 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the TCJA, has proven to be disastrous for our state and country. And a recent report by the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy showed that more than 55 of the country's largest corporations like Amazon, Xcel Energy, and others paid nothing in federal taxes in tax year 2020. But in fact, many of them received tax refunds while earning billions of dollars in profit. Those who oppose this tax bill to bring more fairness and justice to our tax code should try to tell people like Joshua Earlywine from Moose Lake, Minnesota, who is a correctional officer and member of AFSCME Local 3887, why he should be paying more in federal taxes than multinational corporations when Josh was forced to sleep in an ice house in his driveway to protect his wife and young children from contracting the COVID-19 virus when his correctional facility experienced an outbreak. For too long, workers have carried the burden of a tax code that always benefits corporations and the wealthy and well-connected while extracting more and more resources from workers, the working poor, the middle class, and our BIPOC communities. So on behalf of AFSCME Council 5, Mr. Chair and members, we support House File 991. We appreciate the opportunity to speak today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Hall? Thank you very much. Next, we have Eric Skogup, and Davis Sensman is on deck. Eric Skogup, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Thank you very much. My name is Eric Skoog. I'm one of the owners here at Cintrav. We're a travel company based in Burnsville, Minnesota, and I'm here to talk about PPP conformity as it applies to us, and I'm kind of a visual guy, so I got my little slides. PPP conformity right now, as it's written in the current law format for HF 991, only addresses an amount. The amount is $350,000. It does not address the need. It is not a needs-based system, and sometimes when you're addressing the amount, you don't talk about the needs. Our company got $642,400. It was basically 100% of a loan until we used all $642,400. We used all of it, and we have none of it left. We used it all to pay for people on our payroll. We used it all for PPE equipment, and we used it all for rent, exactly how the IRS asked us to do. All three of these amounts, payroll tax, sales tax, property tax, all of that went to the state of Minnesota in the form of the different areas that we spent the money on. We had to file a big, long, arduous form with the IRS that was pages and pages of long. But basically, right here shows that we paid 100% of the amount out that we received. Except now, state of Minnesota is saying that only $350,000 is going to be refunded from the expenses. So that leaves the fact that you're saying I'm going to need to pay taxes on $292,400. That would be all great and awesome, except for the fact that my business lost $2.7 million last year. And me and my other ownership partners basically are now saying, instead of losing 2.7, which that's what's on my IRS form, state of Minnesota is going to say I made $292,400. So I'm going to pay a tax bill to the state of Minnesota for $292,000. It's going to be $26,176. That's awesome, except for the fact that I emptied all of my 401ks and retirement accounts, as long as, and my other ownership group did too, to the amount of $3.1 million. Those have all been reduced to zero. There are four other states in the entire United States that are not conforming to PPP.
Mr. Skoog, we're running out of time. Can you finish up, please?
Texas doesn't tax you personally anyway, so they don't really matter. So there's really only four other states that are not PPP conforming. My address again, please fix it to not be amount, but to be the need. If you want an idea about how to fix it, what you do is you look at 2019.
That's time.
Yes.
Thank you. And I appreciate your technology. That's kind of where I'm at. very simple. So I appreciate that very much.
Yeah.
Any questions? All right. Thank you much. Thank you, Mr. Skoog. Davis Sensman and then Carrie Edelman is on deck. Davis Sensman, welcome to the committee and please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Davis Sensman. I'm the co-chair of the advisory board of the Main Street Alliance of Minnesota, an organization of Minnesota small business owners. And as you all know, Minnesota small businesses across the state have weathered the worst possible economic environment in the past year plus. The recovery from this will likely take many years, but can be hastened by many of the provisions in HF 991. MSA was relieved to see that the bill provides vital federal conformity for PPP loans up to $350,000, thereby avoiding an unexpected tax burden for over 90% of Minnesota small businesses who received this emergency lifeline. As a reminder, in order for those funds to be forgiven by the IRS, they had to be used primarily for payroll and within a very limited amount of time. Because our Minnesota small businesses were prevented from reserving any of those funds for tax liability, we are extremely grateful that HF 991 conforms with the federal exemption of PPP funds for taxable income up to $350,000. We are also glad to see the creation of a fifth-tier income tax for the absolute highest earners in the state. The very few married couples in Minnesota who own over $1 million jointly have in recent history paid far less in federal taxes than the richest Minnesotans of the past. This tax is widely supported by and will not at all impact hardworking small business owners who provide nearly 50% of our jobs and have a median income of less than $50,000. We also appreciate that the bill requires corporations to finally pay taxes on GILTI and funds stashed away in tax havens. Like the fifth-tier income tax, I can assure you these additional corporate taxes will not hurt Minnesota's entrepreneurs and small business owners. The small business owners across our state have certainly learned in the past year how fast a completely unexpected issue can wipe out any anticipated surplus. It is our hope that our legislature and governor will heed this lesson and not allow an anticipated surplus or one-time federal rescue funds to prevent them from raising additional revenue now. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Next is Carrie Edelman and then Christy Ransom is on deck. So Carrie Edelman, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Marquardt and members of the committee. My name is Carrie Edelman and I live in Eureka Township in Dakota County. I'm a home care worker and a member of SEIU Home Care, Healthcare Minnesota. On behalf of my union, I'm here to support House File 991, especially the parts which would create a new fifth tier income tax rate. Our union, which represents 50,000 members in hospitals, clinics, nursing homes, and self-directed home care, believes we need to raise this revenue to fund essential workers in healthcare, childcare, education, and most especially a new contract for home care workers. I bring an unusual perspective to this debate. If my life had not taken a significant turn 5 years ago, I might very well be someone impacted by the proposed new fifth tier. I spent over 20 years working in financial services, building a career I was proud of with an income that allowed my family a few luxuries. But in the fall of 2015, everything changed when my son Keegan, an Iraqi war veteran, was involved in a motor vehicle accident, which left him critically injured. After 10 months in the hospital, we were told to find him a nursing home. We declined and brought him home instead. My son is now 100% dependent on caregivers for all of his basic needs. We struggled to find PCAs to provide my son the care he needs, but the low wages and high turnover led to failure. Without any alternative, I decided to give up my six-figure career to take care of my son. And now, instead of funding my 401k, I'm hoping the new SEIU contract will raise the minimum wage for home care workers to $15.25 an hour. If I knew then how hard PCAs worked and how little they get paid and how much they mean to the elderly and disabled, I would have been happy to pay a little more extra in taxes myself so that we could raise their wages and address the workforce shortages. As someone who's been fortunate financially, I think most Minnesotans with similar success would be willing to pay a little bit more to support those who care for the elderly and disabled. Thank you for your support.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Very good. Thank you much. Next is Christy Ransom, and Mike Hickey is on deck. Christy Ransom, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you, Chairman Quart and members of the committee. My name is Christy Ransom, and I'm the president and CEO of the Winona Area Chamber of Commerce in Southeast Minnesota. I want to speak to you on three points in the omnibus bill, one being full PPP conformity. As stated by some of my other colleagues and others that have testified before me, it's imperative that we have full PPP conformity. I spoke to a business just the other day that has, that as many of you probably know, Winona is very manufacturing heavy, and I spoke to a business that had over 600 employees. When the pandemic hit, they laid off all but 30 of them. All of them would have continued to be on unemployment for several months had the PPP loans not been available to them to pay for those employees to come back. They are an industry that was without funds for about 7 months of last year. The PPP funds allowed them to come back. Of course, that was over $350,000 with 600 employees that were coming back to work. But they don't have that kind of income, as Eric Skoog has testified before me, to pay income tax on that, those PPP funds that were meant to bring those employees back. All of that funds would have been used for unemployment from our state if they wouldn't have been brought back. So PPP conformity is the number one thing that I would like to talk to you about. The other thing that I'd like to discuss is a permanent fifth tax tier. A business such as that, people that are in that tax tier, this puts us as an island in a country being the second highest tax state in the country, and we're already really high and unfavorable. We're a border community, and right now, Wisconsin's highest tax tier is 7.65%. Iowa's highest tax tier is 8.53%. Putting that additional tax tier in our income taxes would put us at 3.5% higher than our nearest neighbor in Winona and 2.62% higher than Iowa. We already fight to keep our businesses here when they look to expand because they're looking to expand across our borders. Losing those businesses.
Ms. Ransom, time, if you could finish up, please.
Yep, would lose working class Minnesotans, and we absolutely need to keep them here. So, please conform fully with PPP and really consider not adding that fifth tax tier. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Ransom? All right, we're going to move to Mike Hickey, and then Chris Connery is on deck. Mike Hickey, please introduce yourself and welcome to the committee.
Yeah, you know this, and the link.
Hello, Chair Mark Quart, Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. As many of you know, we're the major small business group in the state with a little over 9,000 members. We support several provisions in the bill and appreciate what you're trying to do here on several of them. We certainly appreciate your partial PPP loan conformity, but really urge you to go the extra mile, go the extra step, join with the Senate and with the many long list of states that have done total conformity on this. People who took loans greater than $350,000 really stepped up and signed on the dotted line, stepped up and kept people employed in their part in a bad pandemic. And it'd be great if they could all receive the tax forgiveness. And we urge you to give that some strong consideration. I really appreciate, pleasant surprise, the increase in the exemption on the state general tax. Mr. Chairman, raising the market value level from $100,000 to $150,000. As many of you know, for students of the state general tax, it's 20 to 30% of a business's property taxes. And in rural Minnesota, especially, there are people with market values of $150,000, $200,000. So this is a big help. And it's some real relief for struggling small businesses, which we support. We also support the pass-through entity option, allowing people to work around the salt cap, getting a greater state and local tax deduction. And Mr. Chairman, I really appreciate the changes that were made in this bill, dropping the very high 9.85% rate on every dollar of taxation for people who opted for that. And I think we've made the proposal a lot more attractive and viable. Nobody pays 9.85% on every dollar of their income in this state. And people who signed up for that under the original bill would be signing up for that. So that's a real positive change and a pleasant surprise. And finally, I see the hands up. I just wanted to say that big surprise, we're strongly opposed to having the second highest income tax rate in the country. I realize it doesn't pertain to a lot of the NFIB members in your district, Mr. Chairman, and it, or to many NFIB members in general, but it sends a very negative signal about how Minnesota handles taxes and spending issues, and also for the very small number of members we have affected.
That is time.
They tend to employ a lot of people, and it's a negative message.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Hickey? Seeing none, next we have Chris Connery and then Michael Dahl. Chris Connery, welcome to the committee.
Chair Marquardt and members of the committee, my name is Chris Connery. I'm the director of the 100% campaign. We're a coalition of over 50 organizations advancing equitable climate solutions in Minnesota. I'm here to share our appreciation for the House Omnibus Tax Bill, and we'll focus on three quick items. First, we support the creation of a fifth-tier income tax. It's a targeted policy that will help provide the revenue we need to meet the state's many needs for public investments, including investments in equitable climate solutions. Second, we support strengthening the working family credit. We encourage the committee to increase its use of this credit to better match the governor's proposal. Taken together, these two proposals will help create a more fair, more progressive tax code for all Minnesotans. Finally, we appreciate the bill's caution about future years. We should not overestimate the strength of the state's fiscal position. According to our February forecast, we have only a $260 million structural balance. Much of the remaining surplus is one-time, inflated by certain pandemic-caused spending decreases and federal relief payments. We applaud the proposal for making sure that we sustain new revenues into fiscal years 23 and 24 and 25. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Connery? Thank you. Next, we have Michael Dahl, and then Cap O'Rourke is on deck. Michael Dahl, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michael Dahl, and I'm the Public Policy Director at Homeline, a statewide tenant advocacy organization. Through our statewide hotline, we offer free and confidential legal assistance to renters and receive over 1,000 calls each month. In other words, we've got our fingers on the pulse regarding the issues and opportunities many renters in Minnesota face. As such, we are pleased to see that the House uses progressive tax measures as tools to address the needs of economically struggling communities. For example, Homeline often helps tenants who note that the renter's credit is a critical asset. The relief provided by the renter's credit is urgently needed for people already struggling to afford rent. As reported by the Minnesota Housing Partnership's State of the State Housing 2001 report, in the last two decades, the median renter income has decreased by 1%, yet the median gross rent has increased by 14%. Renters just can't keep up. Based on our conversations with tenants, renter's credit helps them catch up with buying things they really need. The renter's credit allows people to buy essential daily items like cleaning and laundry supplies, toilet paper, soap, non-perishable food items, and the list goes on. They also support the renter's credit, use the renter's credit to pay for expensive necessities like eyeglasses, insurance, car repairs, dental care, and medications. Also, because the credit is available towards the end of summer, school supplies and kids' clothing are also on the renter's credit list. Thank you so much for the increase in the renter's credit. Indeed, that it is a critical asset to Minnesota renters. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Dahl? Thank you. Next, we have Cap O'Rourke and then Nema Daly on deck. Cap O'Rourke, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Cap O'Rourke. I'm here on behalf of the Midwest Vapor Coalition. I am here specifically regards to the sections that would raise the include hardware for vapor devices into our tobacco current levels of 95%. We are in strong opposition to this. This This tax policy is especially egregious considering that the taxes on cigarettes and snuff have been eliminated from previous versions, and this tax remains. Adults in Minnesota are overwhelmingly choosing vapor as their primary choice to reduce or quit smoking. Adding an additional tax to this deters adults from trying to quit smoking. In fact, this will make vaping significantly more expensive than the addicted relevance of smoking. And so we need to have a tax policy that's based on the continuum of risk. More importantly, these products often are sold separately. The heating devices are sold separately than products containing nicotine. This would be akin to taxing a matchbook with a tobacco rate because it could be used to use a cigarette. Our adult consumers use these heating devices, use CBD, and many of our users use them for medical marijuana. So taxing the heating devices at the 95% rate of tobacco is going to make that use of those products even more difficult. We would urge you to strike this component altogether and create policy that incentivizes people to use lower nicotine products in the marketplace. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. O'Rourke? Thank you. Next, Nima Daly and then Johanna Ruprecht. So, Nima Daly, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Good afternoon. My name is Nima Daly. I'm a 14-year-old AP Olson Middle School student. I would like to see public schools fully funded because that means I would have more opportunities in high schools for languages and outside activities, including biking. I don't think it's right that myself and my peers have to suffer and not have opportunities for a better future. Please, I would hope to see that there will be fully funded public schools for insurance of a better future. That's why I support taxing those who can afford to better our schools. Thank you.
Daly, thank you so much for taking the time to testify today. Any questions? Thank you. Next up, Johanna Ruprecht.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Johanna Ruprecht. I live in Winona and I'm a policy organizer with the Land Stewardship Project, a membership organization made up of farmers, rural and urban people united by shared vision and values representing more than 5,000 Minnesotans. We're happy to support the provisions in this bill expanding on the beginning farmers tax credit, including increasing the tax credit rate available for sale of land or agricultural assets to socially disadvantaged farmers, and allowing a small percentage of funds to be used for administration and developing an online application. These changes will help make sure public support goes to those who face the greatest structural barriers to being able to farm, including beginning farmers who are Black, Indigenous, or people of color, and/or refugees or immigrants. We are also happy to support the major revenue-raising provisions in this bill that ask the wealthiest Minnesotans and profitable corporations to pay their fair share, including the new fifth-tier income tax and the provision to address the problem of corporations off-sharing their profits to tax havens. Provisions like these are a critical step to begin reversing the extraction of wealth from rural communities that has been going on for decades. In 2020, the 125 members of the family who control Cargill took home a record $1.13 billion in dividends. Corporate ag profits are booming on the backs of farmers. In only the second quarter of last year, United Health Group's profit doubled to $6.6 billion. Corporate healthcare profits are booming while rural Minnesotans struggle to get the care they need. The top paid 50 CEOs in Minnesota took home a combined $378 million in total compensation in 2019. The money is there in our society to fund the investments we need. It simply needs to be reclaimed from those wealthiest few who are hoarding it. Rural communities desperately need investment in soil healthy farming practices, in healthcare, childcare, education, paid family leave, broadband, and more. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Very good. Members, those are the testifiers. I want to really thank all the testifiers for keeping us on time. This has worked out great. So tomorrow we will meet at 1 o'clock. We will move the DE1 amendment. We'll do an author's amendment also, and then entertain all other amendments. As I mentioned yesterday, now there's no 24-hour limit. but try to get those in as soon as possible so staff can get those done, but also so we can get those posted before the 1 o'clock meeting tomorrow. So, I mean, I'll try to get things in by tomorrow morning. Also, if you want, if there's a bill that you want to use as an amendment, just use the bill. You don't have to have staff rewrite anything up. We'll make it work and so forth. And also, if as groups see the bills, or excuse me, the amendments get posted, if you would provide a written testimony. We're not going to do spoken testimony tomorrow on the amendments. So that'll just be among members. So if you have thoughts on those amendments, please provide written testimony. So members, with that, and so we will meet tomorrow at 1. We also, again, as a reminder, will meet Friday at 1. And also tomorrow, tomorrow we'll be then voting on the bill, the amendments, but also voting the bills to Ways and Means. And there's no deadline on written testimony. So thank you, members. We will see you all tomorrow. And with that, we are adjourned.